Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Alchemy of Light broadcast, a celebration and exploration of consciousness, how we feel and think, because everything begins with a feeling. And I am Jamel Graham, your host, and I'm very excited. This is our debut on Thursdays. We have moved to Thursday night. So welcome, all you Thursday night listeners and those who've come with me from Saturday, and yay, change is good, and change is the name of the game. I am very excited tonight. We have two guests, two very special guests in the conversation of consciousness and how we feel and think. Our first guest is Betsy Otter Thompson. Hello, Betsy.
Neil, thank you for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
Oh, thank you for being with us. It's a pleasure. And Betsy is an author, as well as the proprietor of a publishing company called Ascension Publishing. She's rather prolific. She pumps out these books of really keen insight, and I really appreciate your sense of humor in your books. It's a very dry but intelligent humor that is really to the point and gives the reader room to just kind of laugh at themselves a little bit and really get the point at the same time. I really have appreciated your style. And this book we are celebrating today is the What Happens If I... book. And it's an exploration of how to make action-reaction work for you instead of against you. And so, Betsy, would you please share with us, start by sharing with us a little bit of what makes Betsy Otter Thompson tick, just a bit. Share with us a little of your story, if you don't mind, and how these inspirations come to you and how they manifest in your life. And just a little bit about your background and your story, if you will, please.
Okay. Well, I knew I was 5 years old when I first knew that I could speak with spirit, but I had a very traumatic reaction from a sibling when I told her what I was doing, and she teased me unmercifully for weeks, and so I gave it up and stopped doing it. And it wasn't until I was in the middle of my life where I was almost homeless that I realized that my previous method of coping with life was not working very well. And I had spent most of it blaming everyone else for my problems. And I became exposed to A Course in Miracles, which for me was all about taking responsibility for my life. And so I started doing that. And one of the things I took responsibility for was the fact that I had this gift of communicating with spirit. And I remember saying a prayer in this one-room apartment in Los Angeles that was roach-infested and not in a very good neighborhood. And I remember sort of saying that I wanted to honor the gift. I wanted to share the gift with others. I wanted to hear the messages. I would write them down, but I needed a job to support me. And 3 weeks later, I had a job in the entertainment business, where I worked for the same man for the next 18 years and did so well that I could retire and write full time. And so it was almost as if the universe said to me, if you're ready, we're ready, and here we go. But I had to get to that point where I had tried everything else except honor myself. And when I honored myself, everything turned around.
Well, I really appreciate that. It seems in this book, that is in particular, that is really the bottom line, is honoring yourself, coming to terms with the love that you are, and developing that. And in the book, it's 20-odd chapters that bring us into these questions, working from the very commonalities of our conditioned beliefs. For example, I'll just open the book here to one that will give the listeners an idea. What happens, oh, this is a good one. What happens if I, and then the question is, what happens if I never think I have enough money? And nothing in matter will ever be enough. Find what satisfies your heart to feel fulfilled. And then the book goes into the analysis of this, but every chapter, it starts like that with a very common question of our limiting beliefs.
Yes, I got the idea for the book when I was having trouble. I'd had a very bad day at work, and I understood and I believed in the mirror theory or the action reaction, the karma, the law of attraction, whatever you want to call it. It's the pulling of energy back to self. And I believed that I thought that my mirror was always in front of me, reflecting to me. But I was having trouble admitting what I must have given to somebody to explain what I had received. And so this is how the book was born, really, from the idea that I wasn't the only one who had these questions of, what did I do to invite this back into my life? And what did I give to somebody else emotionally that caused me to feel the emotional pain that I'm in? And so that's how the book started. And it came up with 33 chapters of just about everything that we've asked ourselves. I think everybody has the same questions. What happens if I make a mistake? What happens if I obsess over others? What happens if I don't love the choices of those I love? All those things that we want to know. And I sort of played the devil's advocate in the book, and I asked the question, and then spirit leads me to resolution in a sometimes very humorous and loving and kind and gentle way.
When you talk about spirit, your conversations with spirit, do you experience that as an entity outside of yourself? Do you feel like you're channeling inside? Do you have an experience of it being a third party? Or is the spirit your authentic soul voice coming through?
All I know is that when I started this when I was five, all I did was start talking to my great-grandmother, and then I heard answers. And that's what happens to me now. And it's almost like I read something in a book that was very similar to what I go through, this book that was written by Eben Alexander, who was dead like in a coma for a week and then came back. And he talked about the experience of what happened to him when he was out of body. And he said that he would have a question, and all of a sudden the answer would overwhelm him. It just sort of rolled through him. And that's sort of what happens to me. I ask a question, and the answer sort of rolls through me. And I don't know how to be more specific, because it's not something that happens in the world of matter that we all relate to. It's something that happens in the heart and the soul. And so it's hard to explain it. But that's what it feels like to me. It just the answer sort of rolls through me, and then I quickly write it down. That's what happens. And I just think that everybody can communicate with spirit. We all have our own way of doing it. This is just my way, and we all have that ability to do it, and we all have our own specific way, an individual way of connecting with spirit.
So spirit, then, if I might offer a summary, is the connection to an etheric plane, to an inner plane.
Yes, definitely.
Okay.
Yes, it's the God within us. It's the God within. We all have God within us. We're all here alive with energy in us, and that energy is God's energy, because energy is one. Energy can't be separated. It can't be created or destroyed. We are all one in energy, and so that force lives within all of us, or we wouldn't be here existing, because the body itself can't do anything alone. It's the spirit within the body that allows us to be here.
And when you, please elaborate a little bit about the body and the spirit or the soul. You use the word soul, I noticed, in your book as well. I use that word too, that the soul, define soul and the difference between soul and spirit, and how you understand the difference in the inner world and the outer manifestation, and the difference both in the expression but also in the connection between the two.
I'm not sure that I would differentiate between the spirit and the soul. I think they're one and the same. I think that before we get here, the soul is planning our journey, before I got here, my soul was planning my journey. The part of me that is eternal was planning this journey for the growth that I could find and where I could expand my heart, or where I didn't find love in a past journey before, where I needed to find it this lifetime. So I'm setting up the challenges, and I'm setting up the circumstances for myself that I will live this journey. And then how I react to those challenges is whether I grow or I don't grow. And I think that we're all doing it together. I mean, I think that all the people that I've met in this lifetime, we were probably all planning our journeys together, helping each other, being the challenge we could for those who we could be the challenge for, or being whatever we needed to be for ourselves and others at the same time that was mutually beneficial. And when I got here, and I think the soul jumps into the body when it's about to birth, and or as it births and takes its first breath of universal substance, it then is inhabited in the body. And then when we leave here and we die, the energy goes out of our body and then goes on to whatever else it wants to learn or understand or another adventure somewhere else. And the body turns to dust and it's just meaningless. It's only valuable for us while it's here with our energy inside of it.
Would you elaborate a little bit on your view of death and the idea that there's a chapter in the book about that, you know, how we perceive death, and share with us a little bit about how soul, the difference in your experience in that.
Well, there's a chapter about what happens if I commit suicide, and it's basically the idea that we come here from a conscious decision to be here. Whether we leave by a conscious decision is up to us. But it isn't, I don't think it's anything that's judged by any God somewhere and, you know, saying this is good or this is bad or this is wrong or this is right. It's just that you put a lot of creativity into getting here in the first place with this body that you have and with the adventure that you're going to live and you are living. And you don't solve anything if you commit suicide, because when you leave your body, you what remains is your emotional energy, and you take your emotions with you. So if you think you're going to commit suicide to get rid of your problems, I think you're mistaken. That you'll take your problems with you, but you won't. It's not going to be a judgment kind of thing. It's just say, oh well, that didn't work, so I'll try something else. But I mean, it takes. I think we spend a lot of our beautiful thought and energy thinking up what kind of a lifetime will be the challenge that we can, that we will be able to expand our hearts in. And so while we're here, we might as well try to do it. And so I don't think there's any difference between here and out of body, except that out of body, we don't have a body. I don't think it's really complicated. I think it's made a lot more complicated by a lot of ideas than it needs to be. I think it's pretty simple. Here we are energy in a body, and when we are out of body, we're energy without a body, and that's about it.
That works. And
yeah.
Elaborate a little bit about this idea of an expanding heart, the expansion of love, the expansion of learning, of growth.
Yeah.
And, you know, are you suggesting that the days that we feel like crap are just as important as the days we feel on our horse and blissful?
I don't think there's ever a moment when something isn't happening. And I think we're always moving in a direction we need to move. We're always facing people we need to face. We always have our perfect reflection in front of us. I explain this idea like the cosmos that we are a part of is in perfect balance at all times. If one planet goes out of orbit, then everything would turn into chaos. It is always perfectly balanced, and therefore everything within the universe is also balanced, and that includes us. And so we are always in balance too, which means that we are always facing our emotional mirrors and other people. So if we want to know where we are in our path or how we're doing, all we have to do is notice who is in front of us to mirror who we are back to us. And I don't think it's complicated. I don't think it's hard to understand. It's only hard to admit when we don't like what our mirror is showing us. That's the hard part, admitting, okay, I have the person in front of me, I do not like their behavior, but then I have behaved like that towards somebody. Maybe it's not that person, it could be somebody else, but it's always in balance. You cannot expect to find kind people in your life if you are not giving kindness to others, because incompatible energy does not mix.
And in the idea of incompatible energy being, how is this different from the law of karma, or do you have a conversation there? It sounds sort of similar. You know what
I
mean?
I think it's the same. I think it's the same thing, just another name for it. Just another name. So, for instance, if you have, you look at people who are living their lives and it looks to you like they're really having a hard time, or they're, for instance, there are somebody who's a murderer or whatever, and you make a judgment about it, there's no way that that's makes any sense in a way, because we don't know what people are here to do, why they're here, what their priorities are, what they hope to learn from this journey. We don't have that information because we don't know what their experience is before, just like we don't even know what their childhood is. We don't know what their past life is. We don't know that. So people are here for their own journey, and those who find each other on purpose because they have some reason for being in that situation. And so when things happen to other people, and I hear a lot of people saying, oh, isn't that horrible, isn't that awful, what I really want to say is, no, it isn't horrible or awful, or they wouldn't be living it, because their souls know what they need to learn. And when you say to yourself, that soul is in the wrong place, or that person is in the wrong place at the wrong time, what you're really saying is the soul in that person is a dummy. And I don't think that's possible. I think that's just not a possibility. The soul is always wise. The soul has the big picture of the life and all the energy has learned and lived before. And so it always has it where it needs to be with the lessons that it's ready to learn, and there are no mistakes happening anywhere.
Okay, I like that. Now, if there are no mistakes, then how does one... let's try it this way. We are coming from a conditioned belief system, a paradigm that basically has cast us all as sinners and, you know, the horrible human race, and look at all the disease and destruction and murder we commit on this planet. And so there's a collective reality in the conscious mirror, if the consciousness, if you will, working with the mirror, your mirror theory. Mm-hmm. So we live in a world that reflects to us these harsher realities. And how does your theory work when we are facing that bigger mirror?
Well, if you're facing it, it depends on how you feel about it. If you're involved in it and you are concentrating on it and you are focusing on it, then it has something to teach you about yourself. If you are not focused on it, you are focused on something else, you're focused on the good, the blessings of your life, the people that you love in your life, that is going to be your reflection. I mean, you are in control of your thoughts and your focus, and whatever you focus on is going to expand. I mean, the people who are living in the trauma or the wars or whatever, let's take one thing at a time, the wars, for instance, those people are there because they have something to learn from being there. I don't know what those lessons are. I don't know why they're there because I don't know their history, and I'm not supposed to know their history. I'm supposed to be concerned about my life, and I'm supposed to focus on whether I'm doing what I want to create in my life. Because once you get that focus that it's not up to you to try to change other people, it's up to you to be the person you want other people to be, life becomes a lot simpler.
And in your life, you've simplified things in this focus, I'm assuming, correct?
What do you mean?
In your trajectory of your own personal growth, you offered that you went from a place of being... you know, more troubled by your life and stressed and, you know, just a little more on the downbeat. And then as you were able to integrate these ideas of being that person that you want to be, has it really manifest in your life that
Yeah.
you are more grounded in this person that you want to be and surrounded by the people that you want to be
Yeah,
too?
When I was spending my life blaming other people, it almost got me homeless, and I certainly wasn't creating a happy life. All I was doing was attracting people back to me who were ready to blame me for everything that happened in their life. It was like they were my perfect mirrors. The insecurities I have are all facing me and other people around me. And when I started to take responsibility, all of a sudden I started attracting people into my life who were also taking responsibility. When I was focusing on everybody else and all the things that they were going through and all the things that they were going wrong, I had people in my life who were focused on me and all the things that I was doing wrong. So it's like it was always that perfect mirror. So we need to ask ourselves, I feel that my whole life turned around when I said, wait a minute, I'm the one who made the choices that got me almost homeless. It wasn't my mother, it wasn't my father, it wasn't my ex-husband, it was me. I'm the one who made those decisions. So therefore, if I got myself into this position of almost being homeless and it was my decision that got me here, I can jolly well make another decision that gets me somewhere else. It was a very empowering thought, thinking, okay, I'm responsible for where I am. It was very, very empowering because it really changed my whole outlook on life when I realized that I was the one who had kept that focus of being in blame. I was the one who perpetuated it. And whatever you focus on is going to expand. And so as I focused on negativity, it got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. It was just like a snowball, you know, down a hill. And but then when I turned it around, it was exactly the same thing. When I had a more positive focus, it was like a snowball going in the positive direction.
Well, I think that is a fantastic testimony and extremely valuable in this time. You know, I would concur that there is a point in all of our lives, and perhaps we revisit it in cycles or particular intervals related to whatever, you know, the heavens or whatever that is, that there is a time when we are faced with things that could be improved in ourselves and our lives, and things come up to give us a little clue. Hey, you know, over here, this is a little rough. And so to hear you say, yeah, well, I created that, and then be able to take that bull by the horns and say, you know, it didn't, well, I'm assuming that it didn't make everything change overnight, but it just, it gave you some sense of self-empowerment that made it a little easier? Is that how it went?
Yeah, and actually it was pretty much overnight. I mean, it wasn't overnight, but it was in 3 weeks, and I consider that to be an awfully quick response. I really do. And I think that once you take a different viewpoint, once you're going to see things through a positive lens, you all of a sudden attract people into your life who are also seeing things through a positive lens, and good things begin to happen. And when you see things through a negative lens, then you're attracting negative people, and then nothing good does happen because you're mired in this negativity that you have for whatever reason, you know, whatever reason you have it. Feel sorry for me, pity me, oh, poor me and my big sob story, which is another chapter. And when you realize that the sob story is a gift, and as you say, you have hard times in your life sometimes, but it's a gift. It's really a gift to help you move through something that you need to move through, that you came here to understand, that you came here to grasp, have a better understanding of, and so it is a gift to you. I mean, I've been able to look at my sob story as a gift, one of the greatest gifts, probably the greatest gift I ever had, because it motivated me to find a different story.
Please share a little bit about where this idea of the lens, positive versus negative, actually manifests. Is it actually all in our heads? And what is the head-heart connection, the emotion to the thought relationship, do you perceive?
Well, I think that my first half of my life, I used to believe really that I couldn't control the thoughts in my head. They just came there and then they were there and I couldn't get rid of them. I was really living in that. I really believed that was true. And because I believed it was true, it was true. When I realized that I could take a focus, I had control over my thoughts. If I had thoughts that I didn't enjoy and I wasn't comfortable in, I had to ask myself, if I don't like these thoughts, why do I keep them in there? Why do I keep them in my mind? I can focus on something else. I can see, and the way I did it was when I had these negative thoughts about what I had been through in my life, I focused on it, and the more I focused on it, the more aggrieved I became, the more resentful I became, the more angry I became, because whenever I was focusing on it from the negative viewpoint, it grew and got bigger and bigger and bigger. And so when I started to see it as a gift instead, I mean, I have a terrible relationship with my mother, but when I began to see my relationship with my mother as a gift, because she had forced me to find a philosophy for myself that worked, because I couldn't get along with her. I didn't have the same priorities she had. I didn't have the same interest she had. I didn't have the same slant on life that she had. And so it was very motivating for me to find something that worked better for me than what I thought had worked for her. And so in a way, she was a great gift. And when I started to see her as a gift, I got strong enough to look at it a little differently and ask myself, the first thing I did was to forgive her and move on. But after a while, I realized I didn't even need to forgive her, because why would I forgive her for being the person who gave me the gift that I really needed to find my purpose in life?
And then at that point, it shifts to gratitude, is what you're saying.
Yes, it shifted to gratitude, exactly.
Well, what comes first, the feeling or the thought, or do they come at the same time?
I think it's my decision to look at something differently. That's when it first starts. My decision to say, wait a minute, is there another way of looking at this? Is there another angle to this? When I first heard the idea that I had chosen my parents, I was thinking to myself, well, for heaven's sakes, why would I have chosen my parents? And then when I asked myself, is that true, then can I find some reason, some good reason for the fact that I chose my parents? And when I focused on what might have been good about that choice, all of a sudden I found reasons. But and when I was focused on the negative, you don't, incompatible thoughts cannot comfortably be in your mind at the same time. You're either focused on the good things or you're focused on the bad things. And we have the power to change that. I think that's where the fallacy is, that we think we don't have the ability to refocus on something else. We do. We control what we put, the thoughts that we put in our mind. And then from the thoughts, you start acting and behaving in the way your thoughts are directing you. And as you act it out into the universe, you attract it back to yourself.
You know, this is very sound and very sober, but what would you say to the person who is just having a challenge making that bridge in themselves? Do you suppose that that person is just having their perfect soul path? That's all that needs to happen. There's no need to worry about that person. Is there a key, you know, like a particularly dark moment that you had that something, some blissful thing just kind of helped nudge you a little? Is there anything to offer when, you know, we see, because, you know, our world is on one level, we are coming out, coming through a major transformation. We're in it, in my opinion, and I want to talk to you about that as well, because you closed the book with the chapter on ascension, and I want to go there, because we are in a very tumultuous time in our world that is demanding our attention, regardless of what our function is. It might be that we need to put our personal lives in order. It might be pulling on us to be more socially responsible. We are connected to the world. We are, as you say, we are as powerful in creating the world that we want to live in as we are in creating the circle of friends that we want to live with. You know, there's an intimate connection there as well that I feel like we're on the jumping pad now. It's all coming home. We have these opportunities. But, you know, I find it challenging sometimes. You know, I want to make, you know, my part positive and, you know, help people ease suffering somehow. And, you know, I wonder, is there a key that can be offered to people to help them along? Or are we helping them mostly by minding our own business?
Well, I think that besides the world at large, we all live in our own. We all create the world around us that represents the giving that we are giving to other people. In other words, we all live in a personal world as well as the big world, and not everybody here is living in the same world to the extent of emotional happiness. And I think that's the only thing that counts, because the world of illusion is just it's like a play. I think Shakespeare had it right when he said that the world is a stage. It's just a stage. It's something acting out on a stage, and the people who need to be there on the stage are there. But there are other stages that are playing out, and your stage is the one that you need to be concerned with, because you cannot give to others what you haven't first given to yourself. You have to become the person that you want other people to be, and then people learn by example. Words are meaningless. You can talk till you're blue in the face, but the words are just noises coming out of your mouth. It is who you are and how you behave that is an example. That is an example to other people. And so I would say, you know, don't let your daily focus be about all the horrible things that are happening in this world. Because if you are not a part of it, it is not relevant to your path. Except that you're keeping yourself in a negative mode by focusing on the negative things that are happening. So start looking in your life for the good things that are happening. Focus on the good things. I always say, if you don't like the nightly news, don't watch it. If they're only focused on the negative, don't watch it, because it's just perpetrating more negativity. And every news program tries to be the most negative, so it gets the most viewers. is that really what you want? Do you really want to be a part of that? And if you don't, then you focus on what it is that you do want to be a part of, because this is how you create the world that you live in. If you take away the negative influences and you focus on the positive, then the positive in your life is going to grow. And I think it comes just from the basic decision that you don't like the focus and you don't like what your focus is creating for you, and you want to focus on something else. And it's an individual decision that every single person has to make. I think that peace in the world starts with the peace within each person, and that's the only way it will ever come.
Right on. Please elaborate a little about positive versus negative. Is everything we like positive and everything we don't like negative? Or is there an option that we can look at a difficult situation with a positive lens and perhaps bring... Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, whatever happens to you, you have to trust that there's a reason that it's in your life, and the reason, because your soul would not have you in a situation where there was not the opportunity for you to grow or for you to learn something. So if you look at it at that, it, even though it feels horrible in the moment, it is a gift to you, you will find the gift. However, if you take the focus that my life is a drag, nothing ever goes right, life is, you know, horrible, blah, 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 that is what expands, and that is what you draw to you in other people who have the same attitude as that. And then the idea gets bigger, because it's two energies that feel the same are joining together and making it a bigger energy. But if you focus on, well, how is this a gift in my life? How can I learn from this? What is this teaching me about myself? What is this person showing me in myself that I need to grow and learn from, and I need to address in my own actions towards others that can help me? Because I think that the soul is too smart to ever have you in a place where you shouldn't be. There's no such thing as a mistake. I define a mistake as an act without love. And when I define it as an act without love, then I always know how to correct it.
And the correction would be what?
To give love. If you've given an act without love, then that is what I call a mistake, because you are creating an act without love to come back to you. And that's the only way I define a mistake. So you can correct it by giving an act of love instead.
Can you go to this conversation of basic human nature and love? Is it, in your experience, the nature of humanity in general to love or not? It seems we're conflicted there.
I think that you only need to look at a newborn baby to know what the natural instinct is. And the natural instinct of a baby is to love everyone it finds. Unconditional love. A baby gives you unconditional love, loves you no matter what your anger, your fits, your upsets, whatever you're going through, the baby still loves you. And I think that is our natural tendency. It is only that the baby starts, you know, we corrupt the baby, and we need to listen to the baby instead of forcing the baby to listen to us.
Yeah. When you talk about love and unconditional love and the consequences of being loving and not being loving, can you elaborate a little bit about that? You know, we have so many different interpretations of love and the way that, you know, gosh, a lot of institutions corrupt that, like marriage. You know, like, everybody should get married who wants to get married. There's nothing wrong with the idea of commitment for life. But this idea, that is probably one of the most conditionally loving contracts there is.
Okay, here's the thing.
Okay.
If you want to know if something is has love or not, if you want to know if an act that you're performing has love or not, you only have to ask yourself, would I like to get this act back? That's when I was learning these ideas, and I was writing, I realized that sometimes I wrote letters and I wasn't sure whether I should send them or not, because I wasn't sure whether what was in them was really very caring or not. And when I realized that I only had to ask myself if I would want to receive this letter, the answer got really simple. And sometimes I didn't want to receive that letter, and so I didn't send it. And this is the answer for, you know, if you want to know about yourself and whether you're living the kind of life that is productive and is loving and is, you just have to say to yourself, would I want to be on the other end of what I'm doing? Would I want to be the other person receiving what I am giving? And that answers every question you have.
Simple truths, and Let's go to ascension, and please share with us your perception of ascension. What is that, and is this a time in our planetary evolution do you think is unique in any way, or is ascension something we're always doing? Perhaps just start with ascension.
Yeah, I think we're always ascending. I think that when you master, mastering ascension is no different from mastering the piano, mastering writing, mastering anything else. It's a moment-by-moment, step-by-step process of learning what you need to learn to accomplish it. A musician doesn't start out playing a concerto. A musician starts out doing the scales. And ascension is the same idea. It's a step-by-step of loving, behaving, being the person you want other people to be, just being the person, a loving, honoring, kind person. Is every time you do that, you ascend a little bit. It's an inner revelation, not an outer revelation. And as the mind becomes healthy, the body joins the same alignment, because the body is a reflection of us as well. It's a reflection of our thoughts. And so if we are feeding loving thoughts to others, we are feeding loving thoughts to the body. And then each day you go from one situation to another and you join other light beings. And some of the light feels wonderful and some does not. But the more you stay in the wonderful feeling light, the lighter you become. And as you fill yourself with this light of eternity, you walk right into the light you represent, and then everywhere light is, you are. But this is something that you don't even need to worry about. You just need to think of, am I living the kind of life that I would like somebody beside me to be living? Am I giving this person what I want to get back? Am I writing the letter to somebody that I would like to receive? Am I handling this situation the way I would someone to handle it with me?
So the idea of ascension being a personal growing process that is integrating our inner world and our outer reality, does that fit what you're saying?
I think ascension is more about inner growth, not the outer growth. I mean, it doesn't think it has much to do with the outside world, because the outside world isn't real. It's just an illusion. It's here today, gone tomorrow. It can't have anything to do with our reality, because it doesn't last. It's very temporary. So what lasts is the emotion within us, and that's where the ascension comes from. It's an inside, you know, life creates from the inside out, not the outside in. And I think go ahead.
Well, what's the point of having a body if the outside doesn't matter?
I think the point is that we wanted to remember what it was, that why we're here and what we came here to do, that to just to love each other and have fun together. And it's a game. I think that it's a game of humanness. And I bet there are millions of other games out there that we have accomplished or we want to accomplish to live in them happily and productively. And so we come here to try to remember how to do that again. If we forget how to do it in the past lifetime, we come back and try to do it again, because we want to master all our games. So why wouldn't we want to master all the games that we could play? And so we're here trying to master this game.
Uh-huh. So in your philosophy or understanding, the soul itself can play many games and many planets?
Absolutely. I mean, how we have such creativity while we're just here. Imagine the creativity we have when we're out of body. And I'm sure we created all kinds of universes, and they all have, you know, different fun things to adventure in the picture of the illusion, but the same lesson, I'm sure the same lessons are being learned in all of them, how to play the game successfully. You know, you have to know the rules of the game before you can play the game. If you set up a game of football and the players are running out of bounds all the time, they're not playing the rules of the game and they get kicked out. So we have to remember what the rules of the game are. And the rules of the game are that the action is that the universe is balanced. It's an emotional action-reaction world where whatever you give, you receive. And you give not for the other person's sake, but you give for your own sake so that you can receive what you want to receive.
Emotional action reaction.
Yes.
Okay, so elaborate a little on that. Emotional reaction.
Because that's what our life is all about. If you think about your childhood, Jamil, and you remember the things that happened to you, it's the emotional things you remember. We live millions of moments in our childhood that we don't remember. We remember the things that impacted us. Things that impacted us were emotional. And so this is what the world is all about. It's about an emotional journey. I mean, you know from, I'm sure, just looking around in the world, that there are people who have millions and millions of dollars and are not happy people. They have everything in the illusion that they could possibly have, and they still aren't happy. And that's because happiness is an emotion within us and cannot be bought. It cannot be bought, cannot be borrowed. It is something that comes from within ourselves, and that's the way it will always be.
Well, thank you for that. We are talking with Betsy Otter Thompson, and I want to be sure to give your website out right now. You can find out more about her books and her work at BetsyThompson.com. That is spelled BetsyThompson.com. You can also find it on the alchemyoflight.org website. If you didn't catch all of that, we will say it again before the end of the broadcast. We are about 10 minutes shy now, and I want to ask you to share with us the understanding that you've come to it in your insights regarding our place in service to others. In the relationship that you're sharing, we're really here to take care of, learn, and focus and our journey, our emotional journey, and be the person that we want to be around. And how do we connect that to service to others?
Well, that is a service to others. If you are being yourself and you are doing what you love, you are being a service to others, because you're being the example of what it is to be here and be a happy person. And that's how people learn from example. You don't learn from words. People can speech and orate and talk and for hours and end, and you don't maybe even hear one word they said. But you do remember the feeling that person had while they were speaking. So this is your service to others, is to be the person that you wish they would be. That is the service. I mean, I don't think it has to be more specific than that, because everybody has a different way of being happy in this world, and isn't it wonderful if that's true? Everybody has a different interest, a different passion, a different way of being happy, and that's what you need to do, is to find what makes you happy. And there's a chapter about what happens if I do what I love but the money doesn't come. Well, you're still doing what you love, and that's what matters. You find another way to support yourself, which is what I did for years working in the entertainment business. I wrote at night, and I wrote and was doing my passion, and the job was supporting me while I wrote. So find what it is that you enjoy doing and do it. If you have to support yourself in another job, do it. But this is what your service is to others. And everybody does that in their own way, and I'm certainly glad that's true.
Well, let's go to another chapter very close to that one, and the one that goes, what happens if I can't create without fear? Let's address fear in our emotional reality.
Well, I think that you only feel fearful when you think something is wrong, and therefore you only need to find what is right for fear to disappear.
Well, give us an example, if you could.
Well, it's easy to say that things are wrong. I mean, you can look out into the world and say, well, it's wrong that we're in war, or you can say it's wrong that your friend is making a certain decision, or it's wrong that somebody got murdered. But if you find what is right in the world instead of what is wrong, you don't feel fearful. And this is all about your focus again. This is all about what you decide to put in your mind and your thoughts. I know it sounds very simplistic, but, you know, it's a lot easier. It's a lot easier to prove it to yourself. You can prove to yourself that it's true. I mean, I could talk for another hour about this idea that you control and I control the thoughts that I keep in my mind, but nobody's going to believe it unless they try it and prove to themselves that it works.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I'm totally with you on that. So we bring them the information, we bring them the ideas, we bring them the books. You know, we're all in this together. If this tool works for you, that's great. Then the ideas, though, being so simple, I think the value of them is that they can stick. And in the process of my life, the simple things have stuck. And they come up like little seeds that were germinated at some particular time for whatever reason. Sometimes, you know, years down the road, suddenly I'll remember this particular way of putting something, and then it'll suddenly make sense. So the simplicity actually has a quite lasting value, I think, even if, you know, the listeners or whoever's reading or whatever, you know, isn't really, maybe it's a little fast for them or a little too simple, but I think you're hitting the nail right on the head. It's really about experiencing this for yourself. It's about getting in the shop in your own inner reality and pushing on a few buttons and seeing what happens and trying it out and, you know, taking the courage to join your own journey in self-discovery.
Right, and if something hasn't worked for you in the past, be willing to try something different. I don't think it's supposed to be, I don't think our journeys here are supposed to be complicated. I think they're supposed to be simple in understanding how everything works. And I think you can't go far wrong if you are treating other people the way you want to be treated. You just can't be. And if you want to meet people who are in a good mood and have positive things to say, then you have to be that person. You have to have positive things to say. And that means that you don't talk about people behind their back. That means that you don't, because you don't, simply for the simple reason that you don't want people talking about you behind your back. That's the motivation. And that's not complicated. It's just hard to remember in every situation because things happen and life keeps moving on and you just forget. So you have to remind yourself. But everything that happens to you is a reminder because your soul, you know, your soul does know the journey you're on and the soul is giving you your cues. You just have to pick up on the cues.
Yes, and that's a fun direction right there. The cues, you know, the abundance of cues if we are able to receive them and catch them, you know?
Uh-huh. But they're usually right in front of us and the people that are in our lives. They aren't that obscure.
They're walking around in neon. Is that what you're suggesting?
Yes, that's what they are. They are. They're in your face.
bless your heart, bless your heart. Well, I really like the last thoughts of your book, and I think they're really valuable to share, and they are simple. Blessed is the soul that knows itself, for heaven is a thought within. I just love that. I think that's very, very to the point and very comforting just to be with that. And so, Betsy, we're coming to the close of our time. Please, again, tell the listeners how to find you. And if there are any exciting events or interviews you want to plug right now, please give us a little bit of where people can find more about you and do include any other interviews you feel inspired to share.
Well, my website is BetsyThompson.com, and they can go to Amazon if they want to see my books and just put in books by Betsy Otter Thompson and the books all come up. And I'm doing a lot of radio shows and I promote them all on Facebook, so if you want to join me on Facebook, it's Betsy Otter Thompson, and write me a little message and say that you heard about me on the show and I'll be sure to befriend you back. And That's what I'm doing, and I just like to leave a little thought with anybody who's listening that we all have the power of God within us, but we decide individually how to use that power. So that's what taking responsibility is all about, and that's what my life is about, has been about learning. We are all autonomous to choose how we behave, how we react to others, and how we share the power we have. So be the light that you hope to encounter in others, because that is how you create the love you desire.
That's really lovely. Say that just one more time.
Be the light part?
Well, kind of summarize the whole thought. Maybe just talk a little bit slower.
Okay. We all have the power of God within us, but we decide individually how to use that power. That's why taking responsibility is so important and has been so important in my life, because we are all autonomous. We eat when we want to eat. We sleep when we want to sleep. We do what we want to do when we want to do it. So we are all autonomous to choose how we behave, how we react to others, and how we share the power we have. So be the light that you hope to encounter in others, because that is how you create the love you desire.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Betsy. I really enjoy your very simple, poignant, and light way of presenting very profound thought. And I celebrate this book and celebrate the next one that I'm sure you're working on already. And thank you so much for joining us here on the Alchemy of Light broadcast. It's really been a pleasure.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. All right, then. Well, take good care of yourself until next time, okay? And we will be taking a short break and be coming back for the second hour with Ethan Fox. So thank you again, Betsy. It's really been a pleasure. And we will resume in a few more minutes.